are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, March 27th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, TYT reporter Nomiki Kunst from Puerto Rico on both the situation on the ground there and on the situation on the ground in New York State with the recent announcement of a challenge to Andrew Cuomo. Also on the program today, the right wing cannot stop attacking high school shooting victims. Repealing the Second Amendment goes mainstream. Trump administration announces the census to be used to suppress the vote. Meanwhile, unable to find a lawyer, Donald Trump wants to make the White House wife-beatery again. The rumors out there is Paul Ryan going to retire. And Indiana passes a law requiring doctors to quiz women about their past abortions. ICE using Facebook now to spread its terror. And a new report shows just how rigged the gerrymanders have left our elections. Lastly, rest in peace, Linda Brown, the famous Brown versus Board of Education case. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, now, I should tell you right up front that I interviewed Nobi Kunst on, I guess this was, what, Friday or Thursday? I don't imagine that the situation has changed that much on the ground in Puerto Rico, nor has it changed in terms of the Andrew Cuomo race. Andrew Cuomo still turns out to be an incredible jerk. In fact, today, I think it was, or yesterday, he quashed, and let me just pull this up. He quashed he basically defunded early voting by not including it in the New York State budget. Just contemplate this for a moment, right? I mean, on a day when it is announced, and we're going to have Ari Berman on the program tomorrow to talk about the implications of this census move and other voting stuff. But on a day that it's announced that the White House is going to add questions to the census in which everyone knows what the intent is for, to intimidate immigrants, to suppress the vote. There are some who are arguing already that the new question cannot be squared with the government's constitutional obligation to ensure a national count of all persons. In other words, regardless of whether you think the question is legitimate or not legitimate, if there is social science data which shows that asking this question will lead to an undercount of citizens in this country, then you are taking an action that is in direct opposition to the obligation you have under the Constitution. Right? I mean, forget what the question is. Any question you know that will inhibit people's responses. Like, have you ever had a speeding ticket? Why are they asking me that? Have you ever committed adultery? right? I mean, there's no reason why we can't ask that question. But if it prohibits or quashes responses from citizens who are like, you know what, I don't feel comfortable with that question, I'm going to skip the census. And there is specific data that shows that that will happen, then asking that question is contrary to the obligations of our government in terms of the Constitution. Census is in the Constitution. So we'll have more to talk about that going forward tomorrow. But the idea that in New York State, at a time when, you know, Republicans are literally pulling out every possible trick and stop to suppress the vote, the idea that in one of the bluest states in the country, we have such regressive voting laws is ridiculous. And it's specifically because Andrew Cuomo wants to keep this state as non-democratic as possible, both big D and little d, frankly. But he specifically does not want overwhelming Democratic majorities in the state house because it's going to put him in an uncomfortable position in terms of where he wants to be situated for any potential run in the future. Or just maybe just politically. I mean, I don't even think that the guy has that deep-seated ideological feelings. But for whatever reason, he is more than happy to have a significant portion of the vote in this state suppressed. So we'll put that on the heap of stuff that Nomi and I have to say about Andrew Cuomo. So meanwhile, and we have sound basically, I mean, mostly about the really relentless project that the right seems to have when it comes to pushing back on high school students. I mean, it is both amazing to see students get this involved in politics on such a intense level. And as inspiring as I think all of us find it, apparently the right wing finds it terrifying. Ben Shapiro seems to have dedicated his entire online presence to making the case that David Hogue, one of the students from Parkland, has no right to be talking about guns. Here is Ben Shapiro's, and I, for the life of me, I can't quite figure out. I mean, because Ben spends about 4 minutes of his 10-minute clip talking about how he is going to disassemble each factual mistake that David Hogue, and it ends up being just a media critique of the way that he's approached. So in that vein, let me just start by saying that in the early 90s, MTV developed a style of shooting, which at the time seemed interesting, but it was incredibly annoying. And that is, I'm shooting and I'm talking direct to camera. And what MTV is going to do is like, we're going to put another camera in the room that's going to make it look like we're a fly on the wall. So we're going to see somebody talk to camera, but they're not going to be talking to our camera. And for some reason, Ben Shapiro has dug deep into the old, old, old playbook of stuff that used to be interesting 25 years ago and actually was always annoying. And half of this is him staring into something that is not the camera. So I would just say, if as long as we're on media critique, that would be my media critique of eventually. Or you just, I don't know what it is. I mean, we do a radio show here, so we don't always talk into camera. But I'm not going to set up another camera over here to watch me talk into this camera. Ben Shapiro does. But watch this. It's sort of fascinating because They really, really are scared of this. And do we have the front part where Shapiro in teasing? Okay, well, so Ben Shapiro is talking about how, again, just because you're a victim of a shooting does not make you an expert on, I guess, gun control. Which, you know, I'm not even sure if that's accurate. Because one of the main reasons why you might want to have gun control is that you realize the horror that guns cause. And if you've been a victim of that, your level of understanding of that is, in many respects, unrivaled. So maybe the exact policy prescriptions that these students are calling for shouldn't be just taken wholesale. But the idea of more gun control and less guns, I think you couldn't be better situated than to have been part of a mass shooting event to be an expert on why we might need that. But in his windup of talking about facts that he was going to deliver, he just sort of casually said, just because George Soros was a collaborator during the Nazis doesn't mean that I'm going to take his political opinions. Now, I think if you actually lived through the Holocaust, you might have a certain insight into the rise of fascism, to what happens to victims of that fascism, to what can happen to families during that time. But Ben Shapiro wants to straw man that just a little bit more. And then, to put a little cherry on top of that, he continues the lie that George Soros was a collaborator. George Soros, and I don't care about George Soros' reputation, but it's just pointing out the lie that is Ben Shapiro.
I mean,
as he winds up to talk about, I'm only going to talk about facts. Let me just casually drop in this total lie. George Soros was 14 years old at the end. At the end of World War II. At one point, he was being protected by some type of local Hungarian official who was charged with going up to a wealthy Jew's estate who apparently had been rounded up at that point and taking an inventory. And he brought Soros with him because he was protecting him and hiding him from the Nazis.
So basically,
and Soros was there, part of that inventory, presumably. And so this is metastasized into George Soros was a collaborator. And the guy who is criticizing students for just being victims of gun violence and not having facts sort of casually puts that out there as a lie.
Well, and it really makes you rewatch Schindler's List.
Yeah, exactly.
All of these collaborators with Schindler.
Indeed. All right. Well, here is Ben Shapiro's point, the breaking down the facts that were apparently problematic in David Hogg's speech.
Approximately 200,000 people showed up in the March for Our Lives. It's a good number. It's a solid number. Okay, the March for Life in 2012 had 650,000 people who showed up to it. Was the media coverage blanket the way that it was on Saturday?
Now, pause it. Now, I would bet just about anything that he is not comparing apples to apples there. 200,000 was a private organization's assessment. The organizers said 800,000. I would bet on the anti-abortion rallies that he's talking about, we have a similar dynamic. But go ahead.
I don't think that this is about the kids at Parkland. Kids are kids. Some of them say smart things. Some of them say dumb things. And just because some tragedy fell upon them doesn't mean that they suddenly have expertise on guns, for example. But the main issue here is why the media have decided to highlight and spotlight these kids. And the reason is because the kids can say things that the media can hide behind. The high school kids who don't really know much about guns, don't know much about gun control, but can speak with passion and verve and are attractive on camera, they can say things that the media want to say, but know that they would be bashed about the ears for saying because they are supposed to be objective. And so what the media do instead is they put all of these kids on camera for hours at a time and then claim that if you criticize what these kids are saying, they're actually criticizing the experience of the experiences of these kids. This is another form of identity politics. So identity politics is this idiotic concept from the left that suggests that we can identify the quality of your perspective simply by the color of your skin or your ethnicity or your age or some.
All right, pause it for 1 second. All right, let me just add, I don't know who he's talking to. He's literally talking down on the desk and sort of like looking at the camera with one eye. But that's not what identity politics are at all. And I'm not defending identity politics, but that's not what identity politics are. Identity politics, when we talk about identity politics, you can't identify the quality of an argument based upon the color of your skin. That's not what identity politics are. Identity politics are when a certain group votes based on the attributes of that group, and they think that it's going to be representative of them to vote for someone who reflects those attributes.
Yeah, actually, Ben, I think you've got that confused with standpoint epistemology, okay?
There you go. So, for instance, you might say, like, I'm a white guy, I'm just going to vote for the white guy. That would be identity politics.
That would certainly be identity
or
politics.
Or perhaps,
in fact, that,
like,
is the original identity politics in the sense that he's using it.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Continue. All right, this is later now when he finally, after like 8 minutes, gets to his critique of this high school student who he really, really, really has a problem with.
And two, Republicans are actually going to show up in broader numbers thanks to this sort of demagoguery than they would otherwise. Okay, we can continue.
Oh, pause it. Okay. So he's now trying to take down David Hogue's argument that more people are going to come out and vote against Donald Trump because of this stuff, or against Republicans. He has, Shapiro has some argument that that's not the case. Actually, this demagoguery is going to motivate people to come and vote. I don't know where he has the data from that. There is a poll that just came out today that shows that only 32% of people who are voting, who are Trump voters, are excited to vote. There are 68% of people who are excited to vote against Trump and the Republicans. But people who say they're most eager to vote strongly disapprove of Trump in a new poll. All right, but whatever. Go ahead.
96 people die every day from guns in our country, yet most representatives have no public stance.
Okay, pause it for 1 second. Okay, first of all, 96 people die in our country every day. 66 of those people die from suicide. Okay, two-thirds of all the people who are...
Pause it. In other words, 66 people die from shooting themselves, which is in no way contrary to David Hogue's point. But continue.
Every day, 66 of those people die from suicide. Okay, two-thirds of all the people who are lumped into the gun violence statistics are suicides. Second of all, the vast majority of people...
Now, here's something I want to explain. When you take a gun and you shoot yourself in the head or you shoot yourself in the mouth, that is a very violent act. That would be gun violence. And in fact, if I decide to shoot myself with a gun... Like this, I'm going to die. If I decide I'm going to kill myself with a scissors or by taking too many pills or whatever, my chances of dying are much less, actually. And a lot of those people go on to actually continue to live their lives, get some help, things turn around.
People who are killed with guns in the United States are killed with handguns. The proposals that have been pushed by March for Our Lives students have nothing to do with handguns. They have to do with AR-15s and so-called assault rifles. Okay, so none of this makes any sense on a policy level.
Pause
it.
On a policy level, let's be clear here that we pass laws all the time that are not geared towards solving every single problem in society. In fact, we have a whole host of financial laws that don't apply to every single possible financial crime, malfeasance that could be taking place.
If it's like, I don't even, what is the analogy?
Why are we outlawing shoplifting when it doesn't in any way impact embezzlement?
That's actually a question I would seriously ask.
Continue.
It's a misappropriated pride.
We say no more. We are going to make this the voting issue. We're going to take this to every election, to every state, and every city. We're going to make sure the best people get in our elections to run, not as politicians, but as Americans. Because this is not cutting it. When people try to suppress your vote, and there are people who stand against you because you are too young, we say no more. When politicians say that your voice doesn't matter because the NRA owns them, we say no more.
Okay, so we can stop it there. I don't need to listen to the rest of this. Okay, so first of all, the yelling and the screaming. I know there are a lot of young kids who think that when they do this, that this is actually just showing passion on the podium. It doesn't. It's not convincing. It doesn't make people like you. It doesn't make people rally behind you.
That was a speech code.
Let me just point out what's going on here. Ben Shapiro, who is sort of looking into camera and not quite centered in camera, just sort of looking like this, is giving tips on how to excite people. I just want to point that out.
Well, and also,
we're watching one of, like, a, and I will say this, because this is impressive, because I know back when I was in show business, you would look for something like this, where how can I put someone who has that quality where you could put them in a room alone, right? Just alone, nothing particularly threatening them, nothing happening in the room, shoot them and get and develop tension and uncomfortability. And he's got it.
He's definitely got it.
This is a guy who you could just sit here and watch him drink a cup of coffee and feel uncomfortable because you could feel how uncomfortable he is in his own skin.
Well, let me also just add here, though, and I know you're going to get to it, but I mean, there's some sophistry going on here, and he's moving the goalposts from a rational critique of policy to now a media critique of presentation.
That is the problem.
Fallacy, logical fallacy, logical fallacy, logical fallacy,
logical fallacy.
Ad hominem, logical fallacy.
That's a classic move by the conservative. When they don't have the policy recommendations to talk about, they talk about the form over substance. And so that is what we see here happening.
Yeah, but they say it really fast, so they sound smart.
I'm going to say it very quickly, and I'm going to look down at sideways into the camera.
Logical fallacy.
And the,
it's not convincing. It doesn't make people like you. It doesn't make people rally behind you.
No, people don't.
In fact, calmness and reason actually make people rally behind
people
you more than
screaming from the podium. People much prefer calmness and reason from the podium.
And this whole thing
fully
that the NRA owns politicians, it's just not true. But
it's absolutely not
I guess
true.
That's not the point. The point here
that's
is, of course, to demagogue the issue as much as humanly possible. It wasn't just David Hogg who did this. At the end of it, he gave sort of a revolution symbol. The person who did this the best, actually, I will say, Emma Gonzalez is the most skilled politician.
Let me pretend that I am giving a rational critique by throwing a bone to one of the other students there. And so I think I've made my point over and over again, which is them bad, me good. So, okay. What happens next? Man. That guy has really got down. He has really perfected the I'm so uncomfortable in my skin, I can barely breathe.
Yeah, that is called presentation.
That's right, presentation.
Yeah,
presentation.
But it's also called this country cannot distinguish between sophistry and actual thought. I mean, this guy, the cool kids philosopher in the New York Times, this guy.
Wow.
Most trollsome title yet from them for anything.
All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, no Mickey Kunst. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. No Mickey Kunst. She is a correspondent for the Young Turks. She is, as we speak, in Puerto Rico. Welcome to the program, Nomi.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me.
So, okay. You're in Puerto Rico. I want to talk to you, obviously, about the work you're doing down there. But mm-hmm. I know that you have been a long time. You've had long involvement in the Democratic Party, particularly in New York State. And mm-hmm. I wanted to talk to you. I've been crapping on Andrew Cuomo for probably, well, since maybe day one of this iteration of this show 7 years ago. But
wow.
Yeah, well, I've had a real problem with Andrew Cuomo for a long time. But I want you to tell folks, because Cynthia Nixon has announced that she's going to run. Mm-hmm. Tell folks what the problem is that Democrats have with Andrew Cuomo in New York State.
Oh, my God. You have 9 hours. Where do I begin?
People will play this at 2x speed.
What's that?
People will play this at 2x speed, so feel free.
Okay. I can talk fast. Where do I begin? Well, let's just start with his base. You know, Andrew Cuomo, in an era of income inequality where New York has some of the starkest income inequality, despite the fact that we're sitting on Wall Street, we have, you know, millionaires and billionaires, probably some of the most in the country, if not the most. And we are faced with, quite frankly, you know, a system of government that has been reckless and ill-equipped to fight this off. And I'm not talking about the city, because the city council is a very progressive city council in New York City, and they're still working within the confines of the state government. So Andrew Cuomo, father, supposedly progressive, you know, he managed his father's campaign. He ran for governor in 2000, previously unelected. He was, you know, appointed to HUD as the HUD secretary under Clinton. This is a guy who's had a very charmed life and has definitely been able to take advantage of his father's name, but it's not his father's policies. And I want to make that very clear. His base, there was a report in the New York Times maybe like 6 or 7 months ago about Andrew Cuomo's donations. He's been in office for 7 years, and there are very few donations under $200. And what does that mean? I think it just reinforces the narrative that Andrew Cuomo has been more concerned with his future political career and raising money for his future political career and perhaps running for president than he has been about the working people in the state. And it's very clear in the policies. So the number one issue, I think, is his billionaire supporters. These aren't your average billionaires. He received $87,000 from the Koch brothers. He has been supported by charter school leaders like Daniel Loeb, who has been openly racist and unapologetically so. He has received money from, you know, obviously the Weinsteins. We don't even have to go through that list. But the real estate industry and the charter schools, I think, are the crux of the issue here, because they're also the same groups that are really in it to divide people in New York. They're invested in income inequality in the state. And furthermore, they're actually supporting a group of 8 renegade Democrats who are conferencing with Republicans, holding up the state Senate.
Yeah, I want to get deep into the IDC thing, because this is, you know, this is not, the IDC issue is sort of almost trans-ideological within the Democratic and the left spectrum. In other words, the IDC thing is a purely, even the most conservative Democrat or the most liberal, you know, maybe sort of like just Democratic curious on the left person mm-hmm. can agree on this topic of the IDC. But I just want to also emphasize the point that you were talking about, like guys like Ken Langone. The story with Andrew Cuomo is that Ken Langone, the Home Depot billionaire, a huge supporter of Chris Christie. It took one meeting with Andrew Cuomo for Cuomo to basically flip on charters and then spread that money throughout New York State in a mm-hmm. just a virulent fashion. I would also add, as we mentioned, Chris Christie. If people mm-hmm. remember the days before as the Washington Bridge scandal broke, Andrew Cuomo was covering for Christie big time. And mm-hmm. I will also add, before we get to the IDC, because this has been an issue for at least 8 years, that
yep.
in 2012,
yep.
in the run-up to the 2012 election where Zephyr Teachout took 30% plus, maybe it was 36 mm-hmm. or 7% in the Democratic mm-hmm. primary, there was a lot of talk about whether the Working Families Party would challenge Andrew Cuomo. And
right.
I sat in a room where with about 40 people who represented, who literally worked in the trenches on a daily basis, working for mm-hmm. Different groups that advocate and provide services for the poor. And what struck me was, as much as they all knew a Republican mm-hmm. would be difficult, they said it's worse with Andrew Cuomo. And this is what was really shocking. Now, he's moved to the left because of that Zephyr Teachout challenge. But not right.
I'll get to that.
But not dramatically. But yeah, talk about that. But first start with the IDC. Explain what this is, because I don't think people outside of New York State understand why New York State isn't as blue in policies as California, and it should be.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even say California has its own issue because, you know, they have a supermajority, but they also have their own issues. But that's another story. I think, when I made that response of, I don't think he's that progressive, the IDC is the reason, and I'm going to explain this to you. Andrew Cuomo is a master of distraction. He gets hit on in the press, he'll change the narrative. It's very Trumpian, so Trumpian that even on his website it said, "Make New York Great Again." Side note, they got called out for that yesterday. The IDC is a group of, it's called the Independent Democratic Conference. And, you know, they've been around in different iterations for several years now. But this generation has to do with a senator named Jeff Klein. Jeff Klein was the deputy leader, was the leader of the Democrats under, we're going to go into a lot of details, but essentially the senator was at war with another senator named Michael Janaris. And it was a little bit of a turf war in the Senate. And, you know, Jeff Klein wanted to be the leader of the Democratic Senate when they turned blue, which they did. But other people just thought that he wasn't the best leader. He was too divisive. And, you know, some of that has to do with policy. Some of that has to do with personality. So instead, the Democrats put Andrea Stewart Cousins, who is a woman of color, very well-liked, very progressive, as the leader. But the issue was, and I'm kind of skipping all over the place here, but this is the main point. The issue is that these renegade Democrats, led by Senator Jeff Klein, recruited more Democrats, and they became the Independent Democratic Conference. And the Independent Democratic Conference is not a party, although it is funded by the Independence Line, or has been funded by the Independence Line, which is another party, not like independent, but independence.
Right.
They are funded by charter schools. They are funded by real estate. They're funded by the same interests as the Republican Party and Andrew Cuomo. And they are caucusing. They're literally voting with and in the room during budget negotiations with the Republicans.
And they are offered basically quasi-leadership positions on different committees and choice positions, so they can basically leverage that to provide goodies for these major donors. So, I mean, they are functionally Republicans. When they run in their district, they put Democrat. And, you know, for folks out there who wonder, how do the voters withstand this? How do they stand for this? You know, name your state senator, I would say, to your average person.
Yeah.
And they don't know. They're just going to vote for the Democrat and they go to sleep.
And these people are not from, you know, I think people who aren't aware, they're like, oh, what if they're from swing districts? Nope, they're not. They're from overwhelmingly Democratic districts. So they are running on the Democratic line so that they get elected. But they are conferencing with Republicans and getting the perks of bigger offices and leadership, and in Jeff Klein's case, autonomy. I mean, Jeff Klein literally gets a bigger salary, his own staff, right? His press person in his own little conference makes double the money that an average senator makes, and it's eight people, right? And then they get to vote with Republicans and get away with it. Now, why does this work into Andrew Cuomo? Because Andrew Cuomo is the puppet master of these guys. Andrew Cuomo wants to hold up the Senate from being progressive so that he doesn't have to vote on progressive economic issues or sign on progressive economic issues to piss off his billionaire friends.
And
the billionaires who are going to send him to the White House.
Okay. All right. So Andrew Cuomo, this is Andrew Cuomo's way of basically triangulating it, making it look like he's signing every piece of progressive legislation that comes down the pike. But even though you have a majority of Democrats in name elected, the Democrats don't control the Senate. So, OK, so what could Andrew Cuomo do about it, though? I mean, like, why do we blame Andrew Cuomo for this?
We blame Andrew Cuomo because he's literally the person calling the shots. You know, he has played into Jeff Klein's ego in a lot of ways. This is a man who has campaigned with Jeff Klein. He has gone out there attacking unions with Jeff Klein, including the teachers union. There is a close relationship that he has with this Senator Jeff Klein. So one thing that Andrew Cuomo could do is he could denounce the IDC.
Right.
He could say, you guys are Democrats, rejoin your conference. But instead, what does he do? He invites them into the room during budget negotiations and leaves out the woman of color during an era of Me Too while they're dealing with Me Too issues in the Senate as we speak. She is left out of the conversation, and it's four men in a room. One, who was not elected to be the leader. Actually, Republican, too.
And we could say Andrew Cuomo, if he wanted to draw attention to it, could take his SUV, drive down to that district, call for the press to show up, denounce the senator for not being a member of the Democratic caucus, and that guy would lose their election come, the next, in the fall. And he refuses to do it. All right, so let's talk a little bit.
Can I make one more point about that real
please,
quick?
Please.
I left something out. Andrew Cuomo also leads the Democratic Party. The New York State Democratic Party, should be out there campaigning for all the Democrats, especially those who are at risk of losing their seats. With the Senate so close, he should be using that party as the leader with all the people he basically appointed to lead the Democratic Party. Instead, he's saving the $31 million in the New York State Democratic Party for himself. He's using it for his ads, for his policies. He's using it to make it look like he is a champion on issues like marriage equality, which, by the way, when he's sitting here saying, well, what can I do? It's the Senate's fault. He was the one who led on marriage equality because he actually took a leadership position. He went there and he moved votes. He brought senators in the room. He smokes them. He worked with them. He doesn't do that on other issues. And he's definitely not doing that with the IDC. He could be using that New York State Democratic money to support Democrats in the Senate. And instead, he's sitting on it. I don't know how he's going to transfer it for possibly his presidential run, but he sure as hell doesn't need $31 million to run for governor.
And we should say, again, the point is that we're in one of the bluest states in the country, if not the bluest state in the country, and we should have policies that are leading on the forefront, literally on the vanguard of policies, whether it's Medicare for all, whether it's paid family leave, whether it's on and on and on and on. Job guarantee, theoretically. I mean, there's a lot of different things that could possibly happen. All right. So with all that said, Cynthia Nixon, aside mm-hmm. from people knowing her as the person mm-hmm. who played opposite me in episode 513, I think it was, of Sex in the City, where I played Letterman Lou, from people knowing her in that context, I don't know if you've seen that, but
I have. I just didn't know it was you.
Yeah.
I've seen all of the episodes.
I was the guy who chewed the steak and spit it out. There you go. Aside from people knowing her in that way, tell us about her political involvement. I know that you must have, over the years, had contact with her because she's been highly engaged in politics.
Yeah, so this is somebody, I've been seeing a lot of people, criticize the actor running. I think when progressives or anybody criticizes the actor or someone famous running, it's rooted in conservatism. There's been a history of conservatives propping up actors to kind of do their bidding. Ronald Reagan, Donald Trump, there's a lot, right? But the truth is that if you want to know about Cynthia Nixon, watch what she's said in the past 3 days. This is somebody who really understands the issues of New York State, these complicated issues we just discussed. She said it in the most eloquent, condensed way that neither of us just did. And she knows exactly where to hit Andrew Cuomo where it hurts. And you only know that through experience. This is somebody who's been on the front lines of education, fighting for education funding, when frankly she doesn't
know. Noemi, you're getting a little bit muffled for a moment. I'm sorry.
Oh,
go ahead.
Sorry, it's because I'm in Puerto Rico. This is somebody who has every reason to sit back and be comfortable and just take in her residual money. But instead, she's been out there on the front lines over the past 2.5 decades fighting for more funding when it comes to education, public schools. She's literally gotten herself arrested. She has been out there protesting. She met her wife through this, Christine, who's also, has been very active in education policy and working with the Working Families Party and under the mayor most recently on education. She has fought for LGBTQ issues. She's fought for economic issues. And I think those activists in New York State who've been involved are very familiar with Cynthia Nixon. People have been trying to get Cynthia Nixon to run for office for 2 decades because they know how invested she's been in these issues. She's also been willing to take on Andrew Cuomo for a long time. That's not an easy thing. There are union leaders. There are progressive activists. There are elected officials who do not like Andrew Cuomo who are afraid of taking on Andrew Cuomo because they're tied to the state funding or to the politics of the Democratic Party. And what Cynthia Nixon has is the freedom to talk about New York and what's happening with the understanding of what's happening. You know, she's somebody who grew up in New York during a different time. As an artist, think about this. This is what I think is really important. Instead of thinking about, like, she's famous, people should think about how this is a working person who grew up in New York when New York was not what it was today, when you could be an artist in New York, where you could be a starving artist in New York. And she ended up becoming, you know, one of the most iconic New Yorkers based on Sex and the City and you know, succeeding at that. And then she stayed in New York. And she's, you know, she's been fighting for these issues when she doesn't need to. So I actually take a lot of offense to when people are criticizing her for being an artist, because I think that we need to respect the arts and we need to respect the artists who are out there fighting for the arts and fighting for the issues that working people care about, because they were working people.
Right. And let's be clear here. She made her money as an actress, but she's not running because she's an actress. She's running because she's an activist. And if she had been a dentist and as active as she's been in and used her, I guess, leveraged her dental practice in the way that she has leveraged her celebrity in the same manner, I think that it'd be a lot tougher to criticize her for that. And they're going to criticize her for anything. I mean, people I think are familiar with Kathleen Quinn. Christine Quinn, excuse me. The quote was, I think, something like she wouldn't support a qualified lesbian to be mayor. That's speaking of herself, but she wants to be an unqualified lesbian. And to me, what that was, it was Andrew Cuomo, and of course, Christine Quinn is a surrogate for Andrew Cuomo. She was defeated in the mayoral election, which elected Bill de Blasio, because she was basically a Bloomberg's, you know, sort of consigliere. And this is Cuomo basically trying to alienate either the upstate voters, Democrats, and I think maybe he thinks that he can prejudice maybe members of the Latino community, because I think it's really based on sort of some stereotypes that Andrew Cuomo must have from years and years ago.
I think you're right. I think that he's, you know, he uses surrogates as props. As if, you know, we didn't learn the lessons of 2016 and how effective that was. You know, by putting somebody out there who's a lesbian, they think that Christine Quinn is going to hurt the lesbian vote. Well, Christine Quinn is bi. I mean, there's lots of, Cynthia Nixon. And Christine Quinn calling her an unqualified lesbian was not just out of touch. It was actually revealing to what kind of operation Cuomo plays, who he surrounds himself with.
And before we switch to Puerto Rico, I just want to remind people that when Mario Cuomo ran against Ed Koch, there was a mailer sent out from the Cuomo campaign that many people attribute to Andrew Cuomo that literally was titled "Vote for Cuomo, not the Homo." And but maybe people change. Anyways, let's talk about Puerto Rico. You're on the ground there. What have you, give us a sense of how the recovery is or is not going?
Yeah, so I and that's why it's a little noisy, and I apologize because of sometimes logistics here are not the easiest. But I've been here for about a little over a week. I've been coming back and forth. This is my fifth trip to Puerto Rico since the storm. Initially, my reporting was focused on figuring out what's going on, the damage, right? How bad is the power situation? How bad is water? Are people getting access to food? You know, what are the conditions like, the infrastructure? And you know, I think that if you're staying in San Juan, it's easy to be fooled. It's easy to be fooled to think, okay, we have power, we have water. But then every once in a while, water will shut down for the day. And that's in San Juan. And that just reminds you that this is a very unstable situation. So what we've been reporting on here, and, you know, we're actually going out into the jungle today, which has been closed for 5 months, 6 months now. I've been focused on this last week, embedding myself in with the crypto community that has set up shop here. Do you know who these people are? Anything about them?
I know a little bit about Brock Pierce, who resides in Puerto Rico. He was a former child actor. He made his millions on sort of a version of YouTube years ago. Maybe I guess in the 2000 was it the I can't remember you know the last
in the gaming community.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so and then in late February he claimed he's going to donate $1 billion. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
Like it was he's going to donate it to in cryptocurrency or what. Like I couldn't tell if it was just a way that he was going to build his own the value of his own cryptocurrency empire or what.
So interesting that you say this. There's a decent sized crypto community here, a blockchain community, that has been coming for really the past 2 years. It's not a new thing, but after the storm, it basically signaled everybody jumped to Puerto Rico because not only were there tax incentives, you know, being in the U.S. territory, there's a disaster. So suddenly, one out of four homes is being foreclosed already under a bankrupt state. With a lowercase s. So Brock showed up and he bought up some property and we actually embedded with him and his senior crew for the last, you know, more than a week actually. But, you know, they had this conference here and so we were involved in a lot of conversations about where he's going to be putting the wealth, where he's going to be investing in across Puerto Rico. And I'm going to just summarize it in the most basic way. This is the most insane cultish community I have seen, and I've lived at an ashram or two or three. it is a flat out cult, and I think that if you know, those who've actually studied the roots of libertarianism, and I'm not saying all libertarians are like this, I think some have different goals and agendas, but the ones that are kind of orchestrating and designing this community, I think there's some real suspicions about how they deal with communities of color. It doesn't mean that they're blatantly racist, but I think that race is a way for them to keep the power at the top. They throw some money here and there at different projects. They have people in the room who don't know what the hell they're doing, talking about reforming education, not understanding what's happening on the ground here. They're not reading the newspaper. I mean, I have so many anecdotes that are going to be brought up through my reports that your jaw's going to drop. But bottom line is they have, you know, very odd behavior. Brock has reinvented himself as being this, like conqueror of San Juan. And by conqueror, I mean he literally dresses like he's Columbus with a Mad Hatter hat. And...
Wait a second. I'm sorry. Nomi. Hold on for one second, because you're a little muffled. Did you say that he literally is wearing a tri-cornered hat?
He's wearing a Mad Hatter. He's wearing a hat that looks like the Mad Hatter, and he puts in little cards. Like I don't know if they're like, I don't get it. I don't really understand what his. There's a lot of occult stuff around him. I don't think it actually signifies anything. The only thing that happens to come up over and over is the triangle, which
this sounds like, you know, this. I mean, this sounds like a joke. And so the guy's going around and they're buying up everything and they're attempting to sort of restructure. I mean, like this is, I mean, this sounds like, I mean, it sounds like disaster capitalism. It sounds like, you know, the year zero type of situation, like following the fall of Baghdad.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I was trying to describe it to somebody yesterday, because there's different types of people here. There's the typical disaster capitalists that come in, the investors. Then there are the different tribes of the blockchain community. But there's really no other way of saying it. You can dress a guy up in suits, or you can dress a guy up in crystals. They're still colonialists. And they're still going to find people that can be their representatives, because they like to say, oh, the Puerto Rican people love us. Well, they also choose who to invite into the community events.
Right.
To make it sound like the Puerto Rican people love them. You know, in the meantime, we're going business to business, talking to people all over the island. We are very active with the organizing community here to get a real sense of what's going on. It's smoke and mirrors. It's a marketing scheme. You know, they say they hate the government and they are decentralized. Well, in the meantime, they're in the back room speaking with government officials, cutting deals with the government officials. They say they're decentralized, but Brock Pierce is the leader. They say that they're open and for transparency, but they have secret passwords to get into their parties. I'm not kidding. You know, a couple anecdotes just to give you a sense of this. When I interviewed Brock the other day, and we're now fighting on Twitter, which is really interesting. When I interviewed Brock the other day, he led with this.
You never do that, Naomi. You never fight on Twitter.
I never fight on Twitter. You gotta lead by example, don't you? So he goes, you know, I said, what brought you to Puerto Rico? And he's like, well, I've been thinking about it for a while, and it was almost like, you know, the universe is telling me something, because for years, my PIN on my bank account was 1492. And I was like, oh, so he's so out of touch that he thinks that that's okay, that, like, finding a new world is okay, not understanding the colonial representation there.
Wow. And did he choose 1492 because that was...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then, you know, there's a lot of Columbus references, finding a new world, rebuilding from the ground up. There's been a brain drain here. We had a little debate over education, because there was somebody at one of these events that she's from Puerto Rico and she studied in the States, and then she came back. She speaks impeccable English, and she gave a presentation about the education system, and she had a book, and the book was in English, and it was from 1972. And she said, you know, our kids are reading these books from 1972. They're moldy, moldy. And, you know, Brock is on stage crying. She's crying. Everybody's crying. We have to do this for the kids. In the meantime, there's an education bill that's literally, like, causing protests every day, every single day, right around the corner. And the bill is to privatize all of the schools in Puerto Rico, public schools, including universities, is a different bill. And they've already shut down hundreds of schools. They're planning on shutting down a couple hundred more. And this is what they're talking about. And so I said, you know, I just find it strange that you think, given the environment on the ground here and how complicated this issue is, that you guys think you're going to fix this. And he said, well, you know, I think that there's lots of solutions, like, you know, and we can bring teachers in.
I'm sorry, wait. There's lots of solutions. You broke up right before you said that.
Like online classrooms and bringing teachers in from the States.
Wow.
And I go, I don't think it's a teacher issue. I think there are a lot of teachers here who would like to have their jobs back, but they shut down hundreds of schools. Also, online classrooms? Really? Like, the results are in here. It's, you know, you can dress them up however you want, and he can sit there and do yoga on the beach and take pictures with all the Puerto Ricans that he can, you know, fund. But the truth is that he and his little friends are reinforcing the structural issues or exacerbating the structural issues that are already on the ground here. Any Democrat that supports it is part of the problem.
This sounds to me like the model of Bill Gates' school reform, frankly, where...
Yep.
There may or may not be, you know, some type of benign intent behind it, but it is shaped by a perspective that has nothing to do with education and nothing to do with democracy, but rather someone who has amassed a huge fortune and feels that gives them an expertise on how to basically go about socially engineering the sort of free market world that they that has rewarded them so well, I guess. But
yeah.
All right. Well, Nomi, go ahead.
Let me just throw out one more piece of information. 500,000 Puerto Ricans have left the island in the last 6 months, and 500 millionaires, as of 2 months ago, have entered the island.
Jeez.
This is a, you know, they say brain drain. I think my concern here, just talking to young people, is these are the activists who'd be fighting against it. They're young people who, you know, already were in a tough spot given the economic crisis here, and it's just gotten worse and worse. And the history of this island is that they killed the activists. They literally imprisoned and killed the independence movement so that it no longer exists. So when we talk about statehood, we have to remember that statehood is a conservative issue. The independence movement, the nationalist movement, and I recommend people read the book, The War Against All Puerto Ricans, just as a starter, that was literally killed by the state.
Yeah, we've had Dennis on this program a number of times, and people can go search the archives for that interview. But Nomi, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam. And I'm sorry it's been a little loud, but I appreciate it.
No problem.
Taking the time.
All right, folks, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will have all sorts of fun. That's the way we do it. You can be a part of that fun, ladies and gentlemen, day in, day out. Or even just you can have the option of being part of that fun day in, day out. Sometimes people just like, they don't necessarily like to go to the party, but they like the invite.
That's a logical fallacy.
I literally, as I was sitting here, I wasn't even going to say anything about this, but this guy. So we happen to be on the Ben Shapiro Report email list. I don't know who put us on there. Dear reader, on April 12th, some disturbing findings in a 220-page book were mailed to the White House by a research firm in Florida. This book holds vast implications for this country, our economy, and Trump's hopes for being reelected in 2020. It comes from a 68-year-old Maryland native and counselor to governments, politicians, and businesses all over the world. So it goes on. The CEOs of two multi-million dollar financial research companies once credited their success almost entirely to knowing this man. He once went to Eastern Europe to serve as an economic advisor after the fall of Soviet Union. Good job with that, incidentally. Central America, he helped the Nicaraguan government bring medical care to the poor. They were so thankful they made him their honorary consul to Europe. Back in the U.S., he once used his wealth to buy up and renovated an entire section of his hometown. The mayor honored him with a city ambassadorship. Yet, if you asked him, he would downplay his own success and connections. As Worth magazine once described him in a profile, meet Bill Bonner, a quiet gentleman idealized by staffers, liked and admired even by competitors. The sense of real begins with Bonner's earnestness, uncomfortable with the notion of success. On April 12th, this same man sent a book to the White House. Okay, so this is back to the beginning, the 220-page book emailed, mailed from Florida. And in it, an important change to our coming way of life. This will take you, that is linkable, and that will take you to a secure BonnerandPartners.com site. Trump team reached out to my network for advice on the economy. April 12th, we sent them this field memo of a coming crisis. Now we're releasing it to the general public. Wait a second. April 12th, this must have been last year. I've put it all in the 20. I am not a survivalist. Wow, okay, a prepper. This is the classic, like, sales funnel. Oh, my God, it's huge. This thing, all right, so wait, let me go back to the original. One brought out by a type of financial event not seen in this country since before the Civil War. This book is unlike anything you've seen before. Not only does it reveal some very uncomfortable truths about our economy, like the true causes of things like racism, drug use, and violence in our inner cities. You've never heard it spoken like this anywhere.
I'm actually going to guess I have.
I think I might want to buy this book. How the Federal Reserve will begin to nationalize billions of financial and real assets like stocks and bonds. Central banks in Japan are already doing this. And many more. Also, it also contains unique ideas from regular Americans can use to protect themselves from what's coming. Things like 11 gold and cash to alternatives. What to do if gold is confiscated, like in 1933. How to store money, no paper trail, in an anonymous dollar account without using Bitcoin or logging into some website you can't trust. These are available at some pharmacies. The only legal way we know of never pay taxes again to the federal government.
Now, here it is, now they have my attention.
Quotes, it all depends on where you live. I suspect if you...
Don't live here?
Right, go to a different country.
Tomorrow's news today.
You will find the facts in this report. Okay, so click here. Now, but here's the weird part. Here's the weird part. Everything you've heard me read, who do you think wrote it? It's from Ben Shapiro's email address. It's actually Will Bonner. The guy they've been talking actually signed it.
That's
sincerely
interesting.
Will Bonner.
I thought Will Bonner was humble.
He's super humble.
He's super humble, but he signs
often talks about himself in the third person.
If you praise yourself in the third person, it's entirely different. It's Ann Hodder and logical fallacy.
Logical fallacy.
Logical fallacy.
How's that for a hip kid philosophy? I'm going to send out emails that ostensibly start by me, but by the time the end it goes up, it's actually from Will Bonner.
Hip kid philosopher. You write your email address out for people with age-old pyramid schemes.
Folks, we're going to head into the fun half. You can become a member of this program by joining the Majority Report at jointhemajorityreport.com, but only do it if you only believe in facts and not in ad hominem attacks.
Well, that's the trouble.
Or demagoguery or anything that appeals to the emotions.
I believe in all of those things from time to time.
We do not appeal to emotions here. We only specifically tell lies that we got from right-wing fever swamps and then also things that aren't quite facts. Jointhemajorityreport.com is where you become a member. We get you the fun half. Also, folks, don't forget, today is Tuesday. You know what that means. TMBS. Mohammed Ben Salman's show.
Mohammed Ben Salman's
show is on tonight.
On tonight's show, we have a Noah Changa. We're talking about the 68 generation and
the Soixante Retards, I think you'll find it's called.
I don't even understand that joke.
Soixante Retards.
Oh, you're talking about the
68
French
generation.
Yeah, well, right. Might be. We're talking about the black radical read of the Second Amendment.
Well, okay.
Logical fallacy.
Identity politics.
And then we're talking about, and then Ilona Minkowski and I on John Bolton.
Identity
and
politics.
The Russia thing. Yeah,
identity
total,
politics.
Total identity politics. And then a commentary from me on the groundbreaking reforms that the kingdom is undertaking to improve women's rights and open up the economy.
That would be so awesome.
How much money we could make to just do a pro-Saudi. And I would just be an excellent mouthpiece for Middle Eastern monarchies. I would do it really well.
I got a story today where the guy who...
I'm actually open to that.
Okay.
I wouldn't do it for the
Russians,
but I would do it for monarchies.
America
in the
Media,
Middle East.
Right? American Media, they do the National Enquirer, I think. They put out a 100-page magazine. No ads. Zero ads. That is, it's selling, you know, it's all about MBS. Yep. It retails for $14. It has no ads, 200 copies. And it is basically a high quality glossy advertisement for Mohammed bin Salman.
It is pretty funny. They
back the wrong they, freaking business.
Totally. I could totally do it. I could sit down with him and talk about, you know, moderating, how to reform the kingdom, creating a...
Tell us again about how women are now allowed to drive cars.
Women are... No, see, this way you're like, we're talking, you're talking about...
I'm curious. I'm curious.
I'm getting 4.0.
I'm getting completely off track here. But I'm curious, has anybody checked to see Sam Harris's perspective on this?
No, I haven't.
But it would be interesting because, right, this is like what he's calling for. Moderating Islam.
Right.
And completely ignoring the fact that, like, it's being done as a fig leaf for, I don't know what you call it, imperialism?
It's a power consolidate. No, I mean, I think the honest reality is that the guy is imperialist and horrifying in his region, and he's doing it to consolidate power, and he wants Saudi Arabia to look a lot more like the United Arab Emirates, which would mean that it would be significantly moderated. All of these things are true simultaneously. And even just that ability to delineate things is beyond Sam Harris's grasp.
Identity politics.
Basically, he's doing identity politics.
That's identity politics.
He's taking it from the master's playbook. Like, how did we get a lot of social advancements in American society? It was during the Cold War, right? They were trying to make a case for why America deserves to be the hegemonic power and the USSR deserves to fall.
That's true.
There's some truth to that.
Learned it from watching you, Dad.
There's some truth to that. It's also just like politics. What he would prefer to be like. I mean, you have all of these like wealthy Saudis that have to go to the Emirates to party, and they would like to not always have to travel to party anymore.
That's true. Convenience is always big. And Jamie, you have a new post up at your Patreon account at patreon.com/JamiePeck.
I do. It was actually cross-posted to Left Voice today as well, which I'm very excited about. And I
well, that's body, a good thing about your Patreon. Patreon is you know, need a penny, give a penny type of situation.
Yeah, yeah. It's totally optional to give me money. But I feel like I should thank Michael especially because I've been really fatigued lately. My health hasn't been great. And the only time I really have the energy to write is when I'm angry. So thank you.
Well, that makes sense.
Wait, you got angry at me or was it random people on Twitter?
It was both.
It was both?
There's a little Easter egg in it for you too.
Oh. Nice.
I don't understand.
People are going to Easter eggs.
Or for anyone who is listening.
That's good advertising.
People are going to.
I don't understand Easter egg stuff. That sounds like identity politics.
I mean, I'm being facetious. It's very obvious.
Were you responding to a position though that wasn't actually held in reality though?
I guess you'll just have to read my blog.
All right.
Could interfere with my show prep with MBS though. I have other things to do.
All right.
Have any of you ever read my blog, by the way? Just curious.
We'll do this on the...
get to the fun app.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920 is the number.
Just make sure you do it well and you do it with passion.
This is so deep. It's a deep state.
We're a superpower. We are now a hyperpower.
Mike Cermak, Cermak.com.
that story is complete garbage.
Thanks, guys. That's not what we're talking about.